6 minutes past 11 o'clock. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm John Raby in for Gary Eichten, and today we continue our Meet the Candidates series. Steve Miles has declared himself a candidate in the race for Republican Senator Rod Graham's seat in 2000. Who is Steve Miles, you ask? He's a DFLer. He's at the University of Minnesota Center for Bioethics. He's a specialist in internal and geriatric medicine. He's on the faculty of the U of M Medical School. He's 49 years old. He lives in Minneapolis. He's married and has two daughters. He's joining former U.S. Attorney David Littlehaug and former Minneapolis City Council member and frequent candidate Dick Franson in the competition to get the DFL endorsement. Miles says there are enough lawyers in the Senate they could use a scientist and a doctor. You should tell us if you agree or disagree, or if you have questions for Steve Miles. Give us a call, 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, or 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. This is your chance on Midday to talk with Steve Miles as he enters the fray. And thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So why are you doing this?
Well, I'm doing this for three reasons. First, for affordable health care, and secondly, for lifelong access to higher education, and third, to save Social Security. All of these are major issues, and it seems like Congress has gotten lost on making progress on these matters.
Why you, though?
Well, I've been involved in all of these issues. I'm a higher educator. I've worked at the university. I know the value of higher education, and I know that a lot of people need continuous retraining during their lives, particularly with the changing technology base. Secondly, I've worked in healthcare all my professional life. I see innumerable people who cannot afford healthcare or who are uninsured and who suffer needless disabilities and needless injuries as a result of that. The standard for developed countries is to have affordable healthcare for every citizen. And third, I am an expert in senior care. I've done a lot of work on Social Security. We need to solve this problem not just for the care of seniors, but also because the boomer generation cannot afford to support their older parents out of their own budgets while they're simultaneously buying their own insurance, putting themselves through school, buying kids their kids' school, and saving for their own retirement. We have to solve this problem together.
You know, these may all be worthy issues. Probably everybody would agree that they're worthy issues, but at some point you must have said, well, you know, my colleagues probably know who I am, some of my students, I guess maybe 80% of your students know who you are. Some people know me, but most people don't know who Steve Miles is. I've really got to question the chances of making a Senate run.
Well, I think the chances are pretty good. I think that I'm at least as well known as Paul Wellstone was at the start of his race. I think I'm at least as well known as Mr. Dernberger was at the start of his Senate race, and he'd never run for office before either. I have given over the last 10 years about 120 lectures a year, most of which are across this state to a number of audiences. I have people who I know in every town in this state. And I'm looking forward to continuing the dialogue across the state, and I think it is possible to build a very successful campaign over the next year.
Okay, what's the strategy on that? Let's start with money. How much do you think you'll need, and where for you is it going to come from?
Well, I'll need $6 million. It'll come from donations, just like it always does. I'm developing a very strong dialing finger, and I work out with my dialing finger now every day. Secondly,
oh, what do you mean? Tell us.
Well, I have a database, and I sit down and call people and ask for money, and that is successful. I'm also planning to stop work, cut back to 20% work at the end of this month, and I'll be using the spare time then to travel around this state to meet audiences across the state, and I've already started doing that.
Mm-hmm. And the response so far?
Very positive. Very positive. People are looking for a campaign that is focused on people's needs. And these needs are basic needs for every Minnesotan.
What is, you know, to make the case for you, don't you have to make a case against Rod Graham's? Can you prove to us that Rod Graham's deserves to be ousted, deserves to be replaced?
I think that Rod Grams has not been a good senator for Minnesota. I think he's far too ideological. I think he's out of touch with people's needs. I think one can pick a number of his votes. One, for example, is when this state was flooded, when we had that huge flood up on the Red River Valley. Instead of getting on promptly to deliver emergency flood relief to that area, he tied it to a balanced budget debate, which delayed flood relief for 60 days, which is essentially half the construction season up there. I think that's irresponsible, and that's not in touch with people's needs. He's voted against health care insurance for kids. We have 10 million kids in the United States without health care insurance, and he has made no steps to address that problem. He's been totally quiet while we've gone from 32 million uninsured when he started his office to 45 million uninsured. And his proposal to privatize Social Security is an enormously destructive and unwise policy. And I think Minnesotans are not where Mr. Grams is.
Okay, what about Lillehog or Franson? Your two DFL opponents so far.
Well, I'm waiting to hear more about Mr. Franzen's positions, and I'm waiting to hear more about Mr. Lillehog's positions. I think that the question is, what types of issues are people going to prioritize? What types of goals are they going to state? And what type of background do they bring to those goals? Mr. Lillehog has not clearly stated what the goals and priorities are for his campaign, and I think that needs to be done. But more than that, I do believe that we need a greater diversity of talent in the Senate. My family's three generations of lawyers. I've been on the board of the American Society of Law and Medicine. I do trial work. I have nothing against lawyers, but we got too many lawyers up there. We need people who can read scientific data. We need people who have broader life experiences. That's what the Senate should be about.
It's 13 minutes past 11 o'clock. We're continuing our Meet the Candidates series on the Midday program. I'm John Raby in for Gary Eichten. And Dr. Steve Miles is our guest. For the campaign, are you just going by Steve Miles?
Steve.
Dr. Steve Miles. Germany, they put the doctor in front of everybody who's a doctor in the candidacy even.
Well, you know, it depends on what kind of mood you're in. You can call me Steve, or you can call me Dr. Miles, or you can, you know, call me Doc, you know.
But you're going to be Steve Miles, though, on the posters.
Absolutely.
So now is your time to talk with Steve Miles about his run for the Senate. 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, or 1-800-242-2828, the toll-free line. And we'll start off with John in St. Paul. Thanks for calling up.
Hi, Dr. Steve Miles.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
Yes, I was wondering if you're a millionaire. I mean, it seems that the Senate is, 60-80% millionaires? I was wondering if you're going to fit into that club. You can see I'm awfully cynical about a millionaire representing my best interest.
I'm not a millionaire unless I win the lottery between now and the campaign. I'll be using my own savings to live on during the campaign. I don't have two homes, and I don't belong to a country club, and I don't have three yachts. And no, I'm not a millionaire. I'm a practicing doc and a practicing teacher.
Your dad did pretty well, didn't he?
He was
one of the founders of Control Data.
My dad did very well. He was one of the founders of Control Data, and certainly that's a life advantage, although the campaign financing limits prohibit him from giving any more than $1,000 to the campaign, same for my mother. So that does not translate into a huge cash advantage.
Are you counting on them for that $1,000, though?
Yes.
Have you asked yet? Was that hard to ask?
No, it wasn't hard to ask. I've gotten so I can ask anybody for $1,000. Will you give?
Well, I have to stay out of it.
Okay.
Let us go to the phones again, and we've got Robin on the line from Minneapolis. Hi, Robin.
Yes, I wanted to ask Dr. Miles questions about where he would stand on issues regarding civil liberties and privacy. I want to preface my question just briefly by saying that I have been in the past active in some DFL campaigns. Senator Wellstone, I was quite enthusiastic about in 1990. But you know, over the past decade, I've been rather disappointed, particularly in the Clinton-Gore administration, and how there has been, I think, a real lack of concern about individual privacy being respected
Give me an example, please.
I would say things like the internet, that there's been, I think, a lack of concern on the administration to make sure that, you know, people's, that there's privacy going to be respected, that the government can't just go in and find out anything they want about a person. Another concern, another example would be like the proposed national ID card. I think that's rather Orwellian. And I just don't see a lot of a lot of Democrats addressing these issues.
Steve Miles?
Well, you know, one of the Microsoft executives the other day remarked in relationship to the way to track email, he said, privacy's gone, get over it. And yet, if you look at the story about the bank last week that was selling Social Security numbers and other personal data, this produced outrage on the part of the customers. I think 800 called into the bank. We need to find new ways to preserve privacy in an electronic age. But more than that, we also have to address the fact that privacy is being diminished by the nature of the communication system we have, and to radically curtail the harms that can result from leaked privacy. For example, it is too easy for people to infer medical diagnoses from a variety of personal information that gets loose, and we have to prevent discrimination, say, in health insurance pricing because of medical information that becomes public. I'm opposed to a national ID card. I think we need to somehow rein in the Social Security number and possibly even consider replacing it with a different type of identity system. On the other hand, we do require a way to identify citizens, particularly for Internet commercial transactions, and that's going to be an important part of making the Internet work for you.
I want to talk about healthcare for just a bit before we take some more calls. You were involved in Hillary Clinton's effort to reform healthcare, which is generally regarded as a debacle, at the very least, a disappointment. What's your take on what happened and why?
Well, being on the Clinton task force was a little bit like riding steerage on the Titanic, and it got really cold and wet down there. I think the biggest problem with the Clinton plan was that they got lost in the policy details and they lost the vision of what needs to be accomplished. In every other developed country, every citizen has affordable, comprehensive health care, generally from a physician of their choice, and that needs to be the goal in this country. It has to be high-quality care. That is an achievable goal, and our failure to do that and the diversity of financing systems that we have has resulted in health care which is not available, is too costly, is priced highest for people who need it most, and furthermore results in health care costs that are a third higher than any other developed country.
I'm kind of interested in what happened internally there. I mean,
yeah, what happened internally was that a very bright guy called Ira Magaziner and Walter Zelman somehow got totally lost in terms of presenting policy widgets and dials and levers and flow charts. And they lost the fact that we had to essentially set a performance standard on Congress to say, look, everybody in the United States must be under a health insurance coverage by date certain. You get us there, we'll work with you to accomplish that. And instead what they did was they designed this Rube Goldberg operation, and then they presented it as a fait accompli to Congress. Now, at the same time, the insurance industry came out and said, oh, no, managed competition will fix this. Harry and Louise sat on the couch saying, we don't want to lose our insurance. And now, if you had a room with 10 Harry and Louises, another couple of them would be uninsured. We've gone from about 35 million uninsured to 43 million uninsured since Harry and Louise sat on their couch.
Wasn't the insurance industry involved in the discussions?
The insurance industry was among the players at the table, but they were not fundamentally on board to the national policy goal to get everybody in the United States assured with affordable health care, and they sabotaged that plan.
Yeah, but who did anybody think that they wouldn't fight such a plan?
Of course.
Why were they included in the first place? This seems kind of odd.
Well, you know, the way they do things in Washington is they say, well, we want to have all the stakeholders at the table, but not necessarily all the stakeholders, when you get them at the table, really want to have the same goal. And this is a problem that we have to solve with leadership in terms of saying, what is the common goal that we have to achieve, and then bring the various stakeholders into line to accomplish that goal.
Okay, now, you're running for Senate. What makes you think that the public, that other senators, that the president, anybody wants to enter this mess again?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons to believe people want to enter this mess again. First, around 1 million people a year are now losing insurance. That is, the number of people who are becoming uninsured is increasing by about 1 million a year. Second, of the 45 million uninsured, three-fourths of those are either working full-time or are the children of people working full-time. And it scares people to death. And in fact, when I go to a room now, I say, next holiday's coming up. Tell me about your extended family out to cousins, nieces, nephews, grandparents, grandchildren. How many of you would have at your next holiday picnic an uninsured person at your own house? And around 70 to 80% of the hands will go up in the room. This is an issue that affects working families and working people across the United States, and they are fed up with a system that is resulting in higher premiums and delivering a more endangered product.
But I would argue that being fed up and being exercised enough to actually take some action on it are two different things. It could be the public's resigned to having so many uninsured people, including so many of themselves.
Well, if they're resigned, then they won't vote for me, so I'm betting that they will.
Let's go to Jim from Rochester. Thank you very much for calling, Jim.
Hi. Well, first of all, a pleasure to speak with you, Dr. Miles. A couple of comments have come up in the meantime while you were talking. First of all, I'm not resigned, and I'm ready to jump on that with you. All respect to Mr. Rabies, but I'm ready to dive into that mess again and try to get national health care going.
Rabies, it's singular.
Rabies, I'm sorry.
Right.
Forgive me.
Rabies will be covered under the national health plan.
Okay. Well, that was quite a faux pas. But anyway, I just want to say I'm very excited to have a scientist in the race. I love people who can actually understand the issues based on their own education and training without having to rely so much on their staff. I think that's very important. I would forgive you even if you were a millionaire. Probably would go with you anyway. And I was wondering, the previous caller raised the issue of privacy and where you stand on a national medical database, which some people have tried to make a mandatory part of our medical landscape. And I'll just listen to the reply.
Okay. Well, no, do you think that's a, tell us first, Jim, whether you think that's a good or a bad idea.
I think it's a bad idea. I'm something of a privacy advocate. I use the PGP encryption program for my email. I am not resigned to the fact that my privacy is gone and I have to get over it.
Okay, thanks for calling. Dan,
well,
what else do we need it?
We don't need it. And we need a way for your doctor to encode your records so that you can have access to them and so your doctor can have access to them. And you know, increasingly, for example, you'll go from one clinic to another to a hospital, and we need to have a way for your medical record, to the extent that it's increasingly an electronic rather than a paper record, can be shared among the healthcare people who are taking care of you. But there's no reason to have a national medical database, and I'd be opposed. And if you want to learn more about the campaign, milesforsenate.org is the website, and 612-677-0706 is the phone number.
Milesforsenate.org.
Milesforsenate.org.
26 minutes past 11 o'clock. We'll get news headlines in just a few minutes, but there's time for us to take another call or two before the news break. Let's go to Amy in St. Paul. Thank you for calling, Amy.
Good morning. My question for Dr. Miles is about mental health care and the problems of people not being covered for mental health care. There's a great problem with people being uninsured, but there's also a huge problem with people like myself who are underinsured, where I've had health insurance, but I have consistently had trouble having mental health care paid for. And, I mean, I'm a graduate student, I'm very educated, but I can't afford the $500 a month in mental health care bills that I have. Could you please say something about that?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. First off, my wife and I adopted a young child with fetal alcohol syndrome, and we know full well the enormous costs of special education and health care for her, and she this year has graduated from high school and is going to college. We can't afford to throw a person with those types of brain disabilities away. We need to take care of them. Secondly, as a person who has a mild form of bipolar disorder, who found that, first off, I had to pay for a fair amount of the care myself, which was no big problem, considering I'm a physician, although it's why I'm probably not a millionaire. I'm quite aware of the inadequacies of mental health coverage, and I think that it should be dealt with as any other physical disorder. And in fact, our nation's productivity really hinges on the degree to which we cover mental health disorders, and secondly, in fact, mental health disorders cause additional physical health expenses as well. The last thing I'd like to say on it is that when I received mental health treatment, the Board of Medical Examiners requested all of my medical records and psychiatrist notes, and I resisted that proposal. The Department of Justice found on my behalf, and the Board of Medical Examiners has retracted its policy. That will improve the ability of me and other doctors to seek medical care, and hopefully will prevent the suicides that resulted from doctors who were unwilling to seek mental health care for fear of a massive invasion of their privacy.
Since you are now entering the fray, it might be a good idea to explain for us what bipolar disorder is, how it affects you, what was the treatment?
Bipolar disorder is it used to go by the name manic depressive disorder. There are four forms of it, 1, 2, 3, 4. One is extremely severe, 2 is a milder form, mainly with depressive illness, 3 and 4 are less well characterized. I have type 2. It was mainly a depressive disorder. It responded nicely to treatment, and it did not adversely affect my career in any way. At the time, actually, I was merging 3 large professional societies and was accomplished that while I was doing it. I did cut back on some committee work and otherwise continued to take care of patients and was treated with medications.
Okay, and the treatment's going well now?
It's been, I think... you know, this is basically like treating high blood pressure, cholesterol, or any other disorder. I've had wonderful treatment, wonderful doctors, and have no disability from it.
I kind of wonder now how much of an issue it would become in a campaign. People are a little more used to this now, aren't they?
A while ago, you know, we sunk up vice presidential candidate because he'd had electroshock therapy. I think that was about 20 years ago, Thomas Eagleton. But I've had over 400 letters that are very positive when I took on the medical board on this question. And I think there isn't a family in Minnesota that hasn't been touched by mental health disorders, including depression or chemical dependency. I think people are looking for ways to decrease disability, decrease the pain and suffering in families, and to secure access to the treatment in a way that is non-discriminatory. So, Amy, I'll be on your side.
Steve Miles is our guest in this hour of Middays. We continue our Meet the Candidates series. More conversation on the way.
I'm Lorna Benson. On Monday's All Things Considered, the story of a young journalist who goes undercover in Minnesota's factories before the turn of the century.
When I got to the factory, I found myself breathing an atmosphere whose distinguishing characteristics were a smell of new cloth, dust, heat, and sewer gas.
The next in our Minnesota Century series, Monday on All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
It's 11:31, time for us to check in with Greta Cunningham for the news.
Good morning, John. President Clinton says he's disappointed the House passed a Republican-backed measure easing restrictions on gun show sales. Clinton calls it a great defeat for the safety of the nation's children. Minnesota's Republican congressmen were split on the amendment. Gil Gutnick voted in favor of the amendment. Jim Ranstad voted against it. Congressman Jim Oberstar was the only Minnesota DFLer who voted for the amendment. Democrats Bill Luther, Colin Peterson, Martin Szabo, and Bruce Vento voted against the amendment. DFL Congressman David Mingy did not vote. The House debate on gun control is continuing today. National Security Advisor Sandy Berger says there may be an agreement on Russia's role in Kosovo. Berger says U.S. and Russian defense chiefs in Helsinki are into a period of closure, and he adds it looks good. Russian troops have been holding off NATO peacekeeping forces at Kosovo's main airport since last week. The Russians are demanding a sector of their own patrol, and they don't want to be under NATO command. Berger says the emerging deal meets NATO's insistence that there be a unity of command. In regional news, the woman the FBI says is Kathleen Salaya is spending another day in jail and fighting extradition to California. Sarah Jane Olson's lawyer won't concede that his client is Salaya, a wanted member of the Symbionese Liberation Army. But the FBI says a fingerprint analysis shows Olson and Salaya are the same person. Yesterday, a St. Paul judge ruled the woman could be held without bail, at least until lawyers give her more information about California law. Ramsey County Attorney Susan Gertner says she's made no decisions about whether to charge Sarah Jane Olson's family members if it's proven they knew she was wanted by the FBI. Olson's husband, Dr. Gerald Peterson, told the Los Angeles Times this week he knows nothing about the allegations against his wife, but other members of Olson's family say Peterson knew for years that Olson was Salaya. The forecast for the state of Minnesota today calls for partly cloudy skies statewide. There's also a chance of showers or thunderstorms in the west. Highs today mainly in the 70s. Checking conditions around the region, Sioux Falls reports light rain in 61. It's cloudy in Fargo in 67. Partly sunny skies in Rochester in 66. Duluth reports sunshine in 68. And in the Twin Cities, partly cloudy skies, a temperature of 66 degrees. John, that's a look at the latest news.
Thank you very much. Minnesota Public Radio's Greta Cunningham. It's 11:33. Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Carousel Automobiles, the Audi store, featuring the top-of-the-line, aluminum-bodied 1999 Audi A8. Information available, 612-544-9591. The head of Planned Parenthood is our speaker on the National Press Club coming up at noon. Stay tuned for that. But we've got another 20 minutes or so to talk with Steve Miles, who has declared for the U.S. Senate. He's a DFLer. He says he will abide by the nomination process, which means he could be out of it if they don't nominate him. How come you decided to go for this?
We need a party, political parties in the state, rather than a millionaires club, which is the real alternative. And while it is true that the party process has seriously flawed and really took a major hit in the last two election cycles, the party, Democratic Party, is trying to renew itself, trying to create rules that are more inclusive, simpler, and less intimidating, and also trying to deliver real value for its candidates. I think it's important for candidates to support that process. And so long as that process continues, I'm looking forward to competing for the endorsement and will honor the endorsement.
That's also true that is it fair to say you're relatively unknown at this point among the general electorate?
Well, no. Well, I suppose, but you know.
I mean, as far as name recognition goes.
Sure.
But my point would be that then the DFL, if you get the endorsement, they could be an enormous help. And at this point, you'd have to make your case to the DFL activists who would be at the convention rather than everybody in Minnesota.
Our polling shows that of the candidates currently in the race, that I am as well, if not better known, and more competitive than some of the other candidates. And so, though people, you know, keep raising the question of name recognition. My favorite question at the press conference was how am I going to stack up against candidates with more name recognition like Oppenheimer, which was a misspoken Vance Offerman. So, I mean, you know, what can I say? Our polls show that my campaign's playing very well in the state.
Let's go to Jerry in Northeast Minneapolis. Northeast. Hello, thanks for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you. I'd like to quickly preface my question, and then I'll shut up and listen. I am very weary of our public officials in the last few years tearing their hair out over sports stadiums and whether we have the Twins or not and whether we have a hockey team or not. To me, comparing that with the grave issues that face this society, nothing could be less significant. And As far as I'm concerned, if Carl Pohlad wants a new baseball stadium, he should pay 100% of it. Not one penny from the pockets of working people that really are just struggling to survive. And I was wondering what Dr. Miles has to say on that.
Okay, and you're saying here, Jerry, that you want your senator to take up your banner on this?
No, I'm just wondering what his take is on that, what his slant is on that.
Okay.
I think that's a great question because I, too, am fed up with what Posner has called amusing ourselves to death, this constant circus of trivial issues which are distracting us from the really important questions of our time, which include health care, access to lifelong education, and preparing for retirement policy for an aging society. And I am just fed up with having spent a year of the federal government's time on things like the Monica story, for example, or a number of other trivial issues that have come before the Senate. And I think that we need to focus on the serious issues. And I think that one of the problems with the Senate has become it's so ingrained in itself, they're so attuned to their own problems that they've forgotten what the real issues are that are facing working people in Minnesota and across the United States.
So can the Senate take that up?
Take up health care?
I'm sorry, can they take up the stadium issue? Do you expect to really see any action on that from the Senate?
I don't think we want to use federal subsidies for any kind of stadium. I'd be opposed to it.
No, I mean, should the Senate take up a proposal that was floated that, for instance, would forbid, I think, cities and states from competing against each other for this kind of thing?
No, we have all sorts of, you know, it is federal policy to allow a fair amount of foolishness as long at the state level, so long as it's not discriminatory, so that if state citizens can't rightly control their own legislators from writing multi-hundred million dollar checks to billionaire team owners, short of committing the state or declaring it an asylum, which I suppose could be done with some sort of health care act, I just don't think that there's a federal role there.
Let's go to Tom in Brainerd. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Before I get on to my real planned question about renewable energy, I just wanted to make the comment, as I heard you discussing health care, that I've read that a significant percentage of physicians believe that prayer can help anyone with any medical issue, any medical situation. But getting back to my original question, I wondered what Mr. Miles believes the federal government should do to promote renewable energy. I think that people in our country have concerns about the greenhouse effect, about acid rain damaging trees, other vegetation, and wiping out aquatic life in New York State, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. There's concerns about hormone imbalances in our bodies due to disruptors in the air pollution, and we have a lot of asthmatics in this country living near the plants that produce electricity, and we get concerns about nuclear waste. Who really wants it? Is it going to cause problems the places that it's stored? What does Mr. Miles believe the federal government should do? Should the government do more to promote renewable energy, fuel cells and wind energy and solar energy?
Steve Miles?
I strongly support an aggressive policy to develop renewable energy sources that do not pollute, and that includes a major expansion of the wind energy effort in Minnesota. Mr. Grams has denigrated those efforts, and he has denigrated the entire renewable energy movement. I do not believe that large amounts of toxic nuclear materials, making more of those toxic materials, is wise policy, and I believe that it endangers our children's children's children, and I think that we should move away from that direction. Although fusion power may offer an alternative to a non-toxic energy source. I agree that we have to look at the extra cost that is imposed by our dependence on fossil fuels, and that includes the cost of asthma, greenhouse effects, and acid rain. And when we look at that and we consider the types of subsidies for renewable energy, I think we have to, we are at the point now where solar, wind, biomass, and other types of energy policy is wise. It is good stewardship. It is health promoting, and I would support it.
18 minutes before noon. It's a continuation of our Meet the Candidate series on Midday. Steve Miles is our guest. He's a DFLer running for Senate. We've talked about a lot of the things that you have some expertise in, but in the Senate, you'd also have to deal with the military. You'd have to deal with economics. You'd have to deal with foreign policy. Do you know anything about these?
Well, let me make a couple comments. Mr. Grams, for example, is or was the Congress's representative to the United Nations. It's my understanding that he had not traveled outside the United States before entering into the government. He did not complete college. He does not speak a foreign language. What are his credentials for assuming that key foreign policy role? I've been in or worked in or visited in more than 60, 70 countries. I've worked for the American Refugee Committee for 20 years in various consulting and directing capacities that included liaison with the United Nations and UNICEF. And so I do have some experience, although I would hardly call myself an expert in those areas, but I do have an ability to learn, and I love to read. The second thing is that I have a different set of analytics skills. When we talk about, for example, the renewable energy problem, the global warming problem, these types of issues require the ability to look at what does the data show. And I would bring those skills to looking at various other types of economic data or military data as well. But not all senators can know all things about all issues, and that's why there are 100 of them. And we will have to pick different issues. My issues will be the issues where I have a lifelong experience, and that's healthcare, education, and retirement policy. And I will seek wise counsel on issues that I don't know much about.
We have room on the toll-free lines. Give us a call, 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Neil in St. Paul. Hi, Neil. Neil, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering about Social Security numbers and privacy, and I thought one of the ways to solve the problem is simply that the government go back to the original intention of Social Security numbers, and simply the Social Security Agency is the only government or private agency that can use them or ask for them. The only private person who could ask for them is your employer, who needs them to figure out your withholding taxes. Thank you.
Wait, Neil?
Yeah.
How do you get the numbers back from everybody who already has them? Everybody from your landlord to, you know, credit card company to whoever.
You pass a law, give them, say, 2 years to straighten things out, and after that, they're fined $1,000 a day per file for any file they have that has the Social Security number on it.
Neil, you might enjoy going to GAO.gov, which is a government website that has some reports on the uses of the Social Security number and on plans for addressing that problem.
What do you think about the idea, Steve Miles?
Well, pulling back the Social Security number, I think, would be an extraordinarily technically difficult question, and I personally don't have enough background to handle the question.
Let's go to Bobby, and welcome to Midday.
Oh, good afternoon. My question is about gun control. Yesterday, the House passed a bill that was to lessen the way you can get a gun at gun shows, instead of all the talk we had about increasing, making it harder. What are his views on those?
We need to have a rational, sane policy that allows hunters and sports people and target shooters to have access to guns, and at the same time that stops the reckless distribution of guns to people who are violent, people who can't handle them, and juveniles, and also to produce safer guns. Mr. Grams is an extremist on this matter. After the Oklahoma City bombing, he even voted against the idea of putting tags on explosives to allow identifying where explosives came from that were used in terrorist acts. He's voted against the ban on assault rifles. He's voted against the Brady Bill. And it seems to me that having reasonable background checks to assure that people aren't felons or have a history of violent crimes is entirely reasonable. And to that extent, at gun shows and in internet transactions, it seems entirely reasonable to say that one side of the transaction, or a broker through which the transaction is conducted, is accountable for conducting that type of background check in a licensed manner. And so I support that.
Why do ordinary civilians need, let's say that, just for the sake of argument, rifles and shotguns okay for hunting? Why do citizens need access to handguns?
Well, I mean, there are a variety of different kinds of handguns, and there's a wonderful analysis that came out in, I believe, the Journal of the American Medical Association last year, looking at the patterns of use of various kinds of handguns. Long barrel weapons do work and are enjoyed by people who do target shooting. The cheap short barrel weapons are primarily used in convenience store robberies. And for people who like pistol target shooting, I see no reason not to allow that type of weapon to be available. But I think the question of these cheap so-called Saturday night specials needs to be addressed as to what the national policy should be on it. At the very least, background checks assuring that these guns are not available to minors and that there is not a market that is not accountable to background checks is the absolute minimum that we should do.
Norm's on the line from Inver Grove Heights. Thanks for calling, Norm.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Yes, I certainly couldn't agree more with the position that you've taken on health insurance, because our present health insurance system is just absolutely corrupt, and we pay for it. We pay for it by virtue of the fact that we pay 14% of GDP versus the next nearest figure to that, which is Canada at 9%. Well, that 5% of a $6 trillion economy is about $300 billion. And that's what it costs us to sustain our present system. And then we end up with a very major part of the population not covered. What we really do need is health insurance that is discrimination free, no discrimination allowed based upon age or pre-existing medical conditions. And you know, one of the things in connection with privacy that comes out of this, or how that connects with privacy, is that a lot of the privacy issues with regard to medical information that is stored by medical information bureaus, a lot of those issues would go away because the information couldn't be used against you. And I'd like to just point out that there is a national organization, since this health insurance reform issue is a national issue, and it has to be done on a nationwide basis. There's an organization based in Ohio called UCAN. The acronym is UHCAN, Universal Healthcare Activity Network, and it can be found on the web. So I'd like to just have you expand upon.
Can I ask you first, Norm,
sure,
some questions? So I take it you would be a Steve Miles supporter.
Absolutely.
You'd like to see him endorsed by the
FBI. Based upon what I've heard so far, yes.
Okay. Are you willing to get involved in the campaign somehow?
That's the time permitting. That's quite conceivable.
Okay. What's your sense among your friends and your relatives and your neighbors about somebody like Steve Miles running for Senate?
Since I've only heard of Steve a few days ago, that has not come up for discussion. The question of health insurance reform is something that I have brought up amongst neighbors, and what I found is rather interesting. going back to that 5% that I mentioned before, the $300 billion a year, well, that is that $300 billion is waste as far as society, as far as this country is concerned overall. But on the other hand, you have to recognize that that $300 billion goes to feed an army of people, an army represented by Louise and Harry, and they are going to fight tooth and nail to protect what they've got. So one person's waste is another person's meal ticket.
Steve, let me let Steve Miles respond at this point. Go ahead.
Well, we've created a gigantic healthcare civil service system that's in the private sector. And in the private sector, the extra administrative costs alone are around $100 some billion, and that needs to be fixed. And then there are other parts of it in terms of overcharges for drugs and so forth. And I entirely agree with you that this has to be fixed, and that's why I, a big reason why I'm running. And if you want to get involved, it's milesforsenate.org, 612-677-0706. But let me just say that we, you know, there's Canada, and there's Germany, and there's Switzerland, and there's a whole bunch of models that we can follow. And I think that one of the things that we are going to have to do is to say we're going to need to have a United States solution that draws from the best of a variety of national models. And I think that one of the problems in the last debate was that the Canadian model was too closely held up as the absolute ideal.
One more question about your dad. He ran as an independent for governor in 1978. Did you learn anything? Were you paying close attention to that run? Did you learn anything from his candidacy?
Yeah, I did. Don't run as an independent.
Well, how come he didn't win?
Well, you know, he ran an honorable campaign, but, you know, there are two major parties, and, you know, the history of third parties in the state is a tough row to hoe. And the Democrats really were not doing well in the state either until they merged. The Democrats and the Farmer Labor Party got together. And I think that it's still possible for a third-party candidate to win. We saw the Ventura win this year, and I think there are very important lessons from that. But my own background is in the Democratic Party, and so that's where I'm going to run.
Okay, just about a minute left. What do you think of the governor?
I think the governor taught us some very important things, or reminded us of some really important things.
Do you like him as governor?
Well, I think that the candor, political candor, is an extremely important thing. And I admire that, although I'm dismayed by some of the things that he says when he's speaking in his candor mode. I think that one of the things that people want is they want a candidate that will honor promises. And Jesse made some very explicit promises. Some of those vetoes, I think he broke promises, and I think that'll be a problem for him. But his ability to connect with real people's needs and to put real people's needs on the top of the political agenda is exactly right.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Steve Miles, and he is a DFLer running for Senate as we continued our series of Meet the Candidates on Midday. If you want more information about his candidacy, you could check out the web at milesforsenate.org.